Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on Blog Talk. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. We are an associate of the TCPN at www.thecommonsnetworkproject.com.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. Today, we have Alan Mackey. He's joining the program once again. He comes on our program quite frequently, and he's a very special guest because he brings to the table a lot of knowledge and information, analyzing many of the political situations that we have going on within this government and also within the world. And also we look at it from a socialist perspective, and also what we do and what we like to use this program for is a means of educating our listeners how capitalism is failing the working class, how capitalism is contrary to creating a peaceful situation where we have peace in our society. So, Alan, once again, I'd like to welcome you to our program today.
Well, thanks for having me again, Stuart.
Alan, I wanted to have you on the program today to come to our listeners and share some information in regards to Obama's recent speech that he made to the nation, where he was going to give us a reason why this nation should be going or preparing for war with Syria. And obviously, he was preparing to address Congress in regards to laying out a cause for this nation to go into another war. But at the last minute, Obama, he took a different path. But what I could hear from his message that he put out a week ago, I didn't really hear that he was, you know, moving away from that pathway to going to war. He is still, in my opinion, seemed like he's still looking for or just decided to take a detour in regards to going to war with Syria. What did you hear, Alan, when you listened to his speech last Tuesday?
Well, I agree with you completely. In fact, even today, John Kerry has just been all over the news talking about how what has happened in Syria proves that even just using the threat of force is what creates a foreign policy that works. And this is just the opposite of what the truth actually is. The reason that Obama was forced to back off of his plans for war is because there's been a massive outpouring from the peoples all over the world, including here in the United States and some of the smallest communities. There have been demonstrations all over the place in this country, people saying that there shouldn't be no war. The American people understand that bombing people is no solution to another tragedy that took place, and that's the use of chemical weapons. And we still don't, as the UN pointed out today, we still don't know who used those weapons. And even if we did know who used those weapons, bombing is no solution. And everybody understands this except for Obama and John Kerry and a few people who head up this government. Now, I'm glad you sent out today about Wesley Clark. I've been circulating that, and some people sent it to me about 2 weeks ago. And Wesley Clark says that he saw papers way back in 2007.
Explain to our listeners who Wesley Clark is.
Well, Wesley Clark is the former general who headed up NATO. And,
exactly.
He's a warmonger himself. And
he was an insider.
It isn't even clear at this point. It sounds to me like Wesley Clark has been supporting Obama and his initiatives to go to war in Syria. However, that contradicts what Wesley Clark said in 2007 when he was campaigning against the Republicans. Apparently,
right.
To Wesley Clark, a Democrat war is good and a Republican war is bad, because Wesley Clark said he met with Donald Rumsfeld, and after his meeting with Donald Rumsfeld, an officer of the Joint staff told him and showed him a piece of paper that said the United States intended to go to war to change the governments in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. He said that they were going to go after a change of governments, seven governments in 5 years. So Obama is keeping to the schedule, and Obama is looking for an excuse to go into Syria in one way or another, and he's going to try and create an incident, and we should be aware of that and be vigilant and do everything we can to prevent this war from developing in Syria because it's a step towards going into Iran.
And as you mentioned, he had mentioned in the memo how the memo said how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq, and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Yeah, so, you know, this is almost
and
hard to believe.
And he said it during a time when he was running. He was looking for political gain. He was looking for political capital because he was running for public office. He was trying to get into the office of in the White House. And now he's backing away from that, but he made those statements from documents that he saw himself, that he saw as a general being exposed to this information, and he made it public.
Yeah, and he said that he dealt with this in his own head for 6 months before he made it public because he was unsure of the consequences and if what this the ramifications that would result. And he said that in his own head, he decided he had to go public with this. It's almost hard to believe, and I almost didn't believe it when somebody sent me a message saying that Wesley Clark said this after a meeting with Donald Rumsfeld. And I asked this person that sent me, do you have any proof of this? And then they sent me a YouTube video, and anybody can see this YouTube video where Wesley Clark states this in no uncertain terms. These are words from his own mouth that anybody can watch and listen to.
Now, let me tell you folks what is going on here. Wesley Clark is a four-star general. Even though he is retired, he is still a four-star general. He is still on the payroll of the Pentagon,
right,
of the Department of Defense. He is still, once a four-star general, you are a four-star general for life. Even though you retire, you still get paid. Now, as a four-star general, he could run for public office, and he made that statement. But now, at a time when the nation is on a pathway to war, he is not going to put himself in a position of going against the very agency that he works for, the Pentagon.
Right. And if anybody can look at his present statements, and his present statements contradict what he said in 2007.
Exactly.
And that's because we have a Democrat in office in the presidency. And if we had a Republican there, he would still be opposed to the war. But he's really very muddle-headed in his thinking about this whole situation in Syria. He doesn't want to give his approval to it, and yet he doesn't want to be at odds with Obama and Hillary.
Exactly.
So, he's not a very reliable person when it comes to peace, but his words should be telling us, you know, these words that came out of his mouth are the truth, and nobody has refuted that ever during this entire time. It's been almost 6 years, and nobody has refuted what he said. And, you know, when he said that it was the intent to go to war and remove the governments in Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran, you know, this is something the American people have to pay very close attention to, because we see what's going on, the drone attacks and everything that have taken place in these countries. Every one of these countries has had some kind of threats or actual action taken against them by the United States in one form or another.
Let me ask you, Alan, we see the timing of what took place a week ago with Obama making this address to the nation, and everything that I heard the days preceding that, it appeared to me that Obama was ready to start shooting the Tomahawk missiles right there at and the cruise missiles going right to Syria. But it seemed like the timing, you know, the shock and awe, we're around 9/11 again. It seemed like the timing was, let's do this when people are supportive of what took place on 9/11. Did you see some correlation there with the timing of his speech and wanting to go to war or to start attacking Syria around 9/11?
I'm sure that in his mind and the image he wanted to create, he wanted to link it with 9/11. And that was his timing. But even
it seemed like it fell flat.
Yeah, but even more than that, if you look at George Bush's statements and his speeches prior to the war in Iraq, it's Obama has almost taken Bush's words and just transferred it to what's going on in Syria with Syria today. And I believe what Obama wants to do is create a situation where he says, okay, looks like things are moving along to get rid of these chemical weapons, but I want Congress to give me the authority to bomb just in case things don't work out. And
right,
I think that's what we're going to see Obama lobbying for. That's what APEC sent over 300 lobbyists into the halls of Congress to lobby these members of Congress.
Oh, I thought it was a few more than that. I thought they had one for every congressperson there on Capitol Hill.
Well, they might. I saw the figure. I think it was in the New York Times or the Washington Post that they sent 300 lobbyists into the halls of Congress. But not only that, on top of the APEC lobbyists, the entire military-industrial complex, these merchants of death and destruction, had their lobbyists going through Congress at the same time. There's no doubt about it that these people want war, and one way or another, they're going to get to war because it's part of their plans. You know, it's these were plans that were laid in place by people like Wolfowitz, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. You know, way back in the 1990s, they were planning all of this, and Obama is not moving away from their war plans at all. In fact, Obama, you know, we heard from people, these big-shot Democrats and everything, oh, you got to elect Obama because if you elect John McCain, we're going to have war. And they said we're going to have wars in these countries. And so now with Obama, we're getting exactly in foreign policy what John McCain promised to deliver.
Oh, exactly. It almost appears that John McCain should have been his defense secretary.
Exactly. And John McCain wants, you know, a vicious war in Syria, and he doesn't recognize. There's very moderate forces that were opposing Assad, and these moderate forces were very nonviolent and confronting Assad, and they had been working against Assad for years. Much of their leadership was forced into exile. They would have faced imprisonment. And instead of supporting these moderates who wanted to come to power and force Assad out, the United States government supported all these ethnic, very vicious ethnic hatreds to surface in Syria. And now we've got this violence that nobody knows how to stop. It's very similar to what happened in Yugoslavia, very similar to what happened in Libya, very similar to what happened in Iraq. And, you know, these people in power, the people that want to say that Assad is a very terrible person, we have to look at Obama. What is the difference between Obama and Assad, other than Obama has a lot more power and influence and has murdered many more people than Assad?
Right. And you know, I look at this incident that happened in Washington today, and I feel sorry for the families that were affected, where several gunmen had taken out several innocent individuals there at the Washington Naval Base. And, you know, that is a tragedy.
Yeah.
But, Alan, when you look at the tragedies that we're creating every day in the Middle East, we're creating homeless families by the hundreds of thousands. Right now there's close to 250,000 refugees that we have created by funding the rebels so that they can fight against that government. Many of these people, these rebels, are being imported from outside to go in there and fight that government, and being funded by the U.S. government and supported by Israel. And we're creating this every day. What I'm seeing, Alan, is we were looking at these gunmen that brought on this terror there at that base. But we didn't see the terror that is being wreaked every day over there in the Middle East and how we're destroying the lives of millions of people, and it's not even being shown to the American people.
Yeah, and it's worse than that because these wars, when you've got a country that's in war after war after war, it creates this trend towards violence, and it permeates the entire society. We've got a very violent society right now, and that's largely the result of the war after war after war that the United States has been in for almost 100 years. And
you know, you mentioned a few minutes ago you were talking about John Kerry. But it seems that Washington, D.C. and John Kerry, as you just mentioned a few seconds ago, they have gone on a full-scale propaganda campaign. They took the gloves off a few months ago, and it was officially repealed, the ban on propaganda to the U.S. public. And this is what our Congress did. They repealed that ban. And since then, since they repealed the ban, Congress, this president, and the Secretary of State has gone on a full-scale mission to just to cover this nation with propaganda. And it's at such a critical time, Alan, that the propaganda is coming when they're trying to sell the nation on war.
Right. But the good part of it is that the American people are beginning to reject this propaganda. I just got off the road. I've been talking to people all over Minnesota. I've been traveling around for over a week. And it's almost impossible, even among military people, it's almost impossible to find anybody that supports going to war.
Oh, you're right about that. I see it every day. I mean,
the American people, I don't know if Minnesota is an exception or what. I've only been in Minnesota the last week or so. But
I see it in California every day, and
yeah,
I'm only 25 miles away from Camp Pendleton.
Then I think that we have to say, and you know, I've seen all kinds of demonstrations all over the country in some of the smallest communities. Right here in Minnesota, people were draping big signs over the freeways and everything, the overpasses, saying no war, no bombing in Syria. You know, the American people are fed up with these imperialist wars, and now they're going to have to figure out, as a people, the way to change the government so that we don't have these warmongers in power that represent Wall Street interests.
You know, Alan, the thing I see is even though we're getting on the street and we're telling this government we don't want war, but the government is actually preparing, you know, where they can take action in war against us. I mean,
they
already have plans in the Pentagon how they're going to suppress any uprisings. The plans are already there.
Yep, they're there. The key to challenging that is get massive and massive numbers of people out in the streets and involved. If people are – what we got to look at doing as activists and organizers, we got to consider that all these people are – that their sentiments are against war. Now it's a matter of organizing those sentiments so that people take the step from voicing opinions to their friends and neighbors to signing petitions and circulating petitions and getting out and demonstrating themselves so that they become active voices for peace. And this is the way we're going to prevent these wars from continuing because, they've said it themselves. They're not going to be satisfied even if they went to Syria. They'd be going into Iran. And this is what motivates them. They have an agenda, and they're sticking to it, and they're not going to deviate from it unless we force them to.
Alan, the U.S. and the world, we know they don't. The world, we don't want to have a war. And what we can see is that chemical weapons were used, but yet we see that Washington doesn't even want to wait for answers. When you look at reason, reasoning tell you that you should wait for evidence. And we could see the same thing back in 2003 when we went on the march to war with Iraq. We didn't wait for the evidence. We rushed into war, and then afterwards we said, well, we made a mistake. It wasn't a mistake, but there are similarities there.
For sure. I heard on the radio today the head of the United Nations. They issued a statement saying that the chemical weapons were used, but they had no findings to determine who used those weapons. But we get back to the same thing again. Even if those, even if we knew who used those chemical weapons, and even if it was Assad, that's still no reason to go to war and start bombing people. So, you know, and this is the message we got to get through. War does not solve the problems of people that have already been hurt.
Well, you know, the one thing I see is if, you know, they say, well, you know, we found the chemical weapons were used by this government. But then they go in and start bombing, you know, hundreds of thousands of innocent people, children, women, you know, elderly people. I mean, you go to war against a nation because of the acts of a government. Alan,
right.
It doesn't make sense.
Well,
it's crazy.
It does make sense to these warmongers. Because, see, I really think that they have a very hidden agenda. And it's what it relates back to what Wesley Clark said back in 2007, that they want to change the governments in these seven countries, including Syria. Now, if you think about this, the United States, in order to change the government, they need boots on the ground in Syria. I believe that the United States government, Obama and all these generals were afraid of going into Syria because they knew that Assad had these chemical weapons and that U.S. troops would be facing these chemical weapons. And now they want to get these chemical weapons out of the country so that U.S. troops can go marching on the ground just like they did in Libya and Iraq to change the government in Syria. And those chemical weapons were deterring that kind of U.S. aggression, and that's what it is, U.S. aggression.
Well,
so how do we know these
chemical weapons didn't come from the U.S.?
Well, it looks like the chemical weapons have actually come from England, from Great Britain. And
that have the capabilities of producing that type of grade of chemical weapons.
Right.
Including the U.S. and Russia
this,
and France and Great Britain. Pardon me?
I've been making the point at a number of peace meetings and stuff that I've gone to that what's really needed is for the countries that provided these chemical weapons to stand up and say, we want these weapons accounted for and we want them back. The countries that provided Syria with these chemical weapons know how many chemical weapons and what kind they provided to Syria, and not one of them are saying anything. We know from the New York Times that there are at least two so-called businessmen that sold these chemical weapons to Syria, and nobody's saying, hey, what exactly and how many did you sell to Syria? Nobody is even asking that question because they've made money. They've made millions and millions of dollars off of selling these dangerous chemical weapons to Syria, and nobody is saying, hey, how many did you sell to Syria and what kind of weapons? Nobody is even asking this.
Yeah, those are important questions.
Why haven't these two businessmen been brought before the United States Congress and asked that question? I mean, it's a very simple and logical thing to do, and yet nobody has done that. They haven't been subpoenaed and asked these questions.
Exactly.
As long as they can make money selling these chemical weapons, everything was hunky-dory. And now they say they want the weapons destroyed, and they say, well, we don't know. We can't trust Assad to tell us how many chemical weapons he even has. For all we know, he may be hiding them. This is what John Kerry has been saying, and this is what John McCain has been saying. And, you know, there is a way to account for these weapons, every single one of them, and that's
exactly.
To ask the people that sold them how many weapons they sold them and what was the nature of the weapons that they sold. Why isn't anybody asking that simple question?
Alan, just recently, I think this was after Obama's speech that he made. I believe this was a statement from you. You say Obama has lost all credibility over Syria. He should just resign. Of course, the Democrats will now cry that they can't help, but give the Republicans their way on everything unless we elect Hillary in 2016 and Democratic majorities in the U.S. House in 2014 and Senate. Was that a statement that came from you?
Yeah, that came from me. And we're seeing that actually playing out right now with the cuts and this whole thing with the budget, where they can't agree to a budget. Obama has said to the Republicans, I'm bending over backwards to try and make cuts that you want. That's what he's telling the Republicans. And yet we don't see Obama or any of these other politicians questioning any amount of money that's being spent on these wars. And there's never an accounting. Nobody asks a question, can we afford to go into more wars? The only congressman that I know that has asked that question is Congressman Rick Nolan from Minnesota, who has brought up the question of how much it's going to cost to go into Syria. And he says it's going to cost billions and billions of dollars. Now, Obama gets on television and says, I'm bending over backwards to try and meet the cuts that these Republicans want so we can come to an agreement so the government doesn't shut down. And why doesn't he fight the Republicans the same way that he's fighting, wants to fight Assad and the Syrian people? You know, why doesn't he use that same determination to defend the social programs right, that we have right here in this country? And he's not willing to do that, but he's willing to go to war with another country that never did anything to us, when the Republicans want to strip us of every social program and gut every social program in this country, and Obama can only say, I can come to agreement on these cuts instead of standing up and fighting them. This makes no sense at all. You know, he's a coward when it comes to defending the interests of the American people right here at home.
Well, you know, one of the things you mentioned in regards to the cost of war that a lot of our listeners need to be aware of, the cost of war is just is mind-boggling. The numbers are just will, you know, knock you off your feet. Right now, this war in Afghanistan and these wars that we have, I shouldn't say wars, but these attacks that we have made on other countries has cost the U.S. government well over $3 trillion.
Yeah.
That's not even getting into the reparations, because the ones that loan a nation the monies to go to war and to attack these governments, they also require you to take care of the repairs, reparation, after the attacks, after the war. And right now we're already sitting on $3 trillion of debt that hasn't been paid for, and we're still borrowing money every day.
Exactly.
Those are the real numbers, Alan.
George Bush and both Obama, too, Bush bombed all these bridges and energy facilities, producing facilities and everything, and schools and hospitals in Iraq, and now the United States is having to rebuild all that, which was destroyed. And we have no ability to find out how much all that is costing us. The same thing in Afghanistan. You know, they bombed all these bridges, they bombed the infrastructure, and now the United States has to begin rebuilding all that. We don't know the cost of any of that. And now they want to go into Syria if they start dropping. But they talk about bombing the airports and stuff in Syria. Well, what does it cost to rebuild those airports after you've bombed them? And we know that all those bombs aren't going to hit where they say they want to hit. They're going to land all on schools and hospitals just like they did in Iraq. And then we're going to have to pay to rebuild all that. And we're going to have to pay to compensate the people that have, the innocent people that have been killed. You know, we're not even being told how many people have been compensated in Iraq because their family members have been killed. They've got a whole process set up where they pay people a little bit if their family members have been killed by U.S. bombs or U.S. troops in Iraq. Nobody knows what those figures are. There's no accountability for any of this.
No. And the nation now is a nation has accumulated so much debt that we have the feds, they're not even reporting the real numbers. The numbers are just going, they're going off the charts. It's now the hidden debt. You know, they have the debt that you see where it says, you know, we're approaching $17 trillion, but the hidden debt is not even talked about anymore.
No.
Because the feds
people
are dumping trillions of dollars into this economy and these wars, trillions.
A lot of people talk about a peace dividend by getting a peace dividend from ending these wars. Obama himself said that even if the war in Afghanistan were ended, there wouldn't be any peace dividends. So what does that tell us? It means that we don't know the true cost of these wars, and we're going to be paying for these wars for many decades to come, if not over 100 years to come. Just like in the Philippines, we've never paid off the debt from the first imperialist war, the Spanish-American War. and we're still paying on that debt. We're still occupying Puerto Rico and Guam, and we still got troops in the Philippines. Tens of thousands of American troops are fighting in the Philippines. Obama sent
another let me ask you, how long was Rome trying to pay off their debt?
They tried to pay off the debt until
the nation finally collapsed.
Right, exactly.
It was never paid off.
And it's going to cause an economic collapse right here in this country, that the debt from the wars and militarism is the most problemsome debt that we have, and not a single member of Congress is willing to confront that and deal with that. And Obama just keeps plunging forward with war after war after war, carrying out Donald Rumsfeld's plans. You know, this is it's just total insanity.
I might mention that we have Alan Mackey's joining our program as he joins our program every other week, and he comes on. Alan Mackey, I might mention, is a political analyst. Unfortunately, I have to say he's a political analyst that represents the left. And he can give us a very good left perspective of what is taking place with these wars and these conflicts that are taking place in the Middle East and around the world, so we can understand what is taking place with Washington and not to believe all that garbage and nonsense that we see on television. Alan, thanks again for joining the program.
Well, thanks for having me. I think that, when I speak to groups of people, a lot of them are little groups in people's living rooms and stuff, people will always say to me, well, why aren't we hearing more people talking like you? And I always tell people, look in the mirror. If you don't speak out and speak up, you're not going to hear people talking like this.
Exactly.
This is what we got to be encouraging people to do, especially working people. We got to begin to encourage working people to voice their opinions very vocally and very forcefully in saying they do not want a war. It just made me sick to see Richard Trumka say that the AFL-CIO hasn't decided what position they're going to take on Syria. Why should it be so hard for the president of the American Federation of Labor,
right,
Congress of Industrial Organizations, to take a position that's for the working class? The working class needs peace. Why should it be so hard and difficult for him to take a position?
Why should it be difficult for Trump? Why should it be difficult for him to make a statement that we don't want war, we want jobs?
Right, and that's the position he should be taking, and he hasn't. And to me, it was an insult to all working people to have the president of the AFL-CIO saying that instead of opening up to at the national convention and discussion on Syria and these wars, that he was going to turn it over to the executive committee of the AFL-CIO, these 57 mostly white men who have supported war after war after war. The International Association of Machinists, its president has supported all these actions for war, claiming that it creates jobs, in complete contradiction to William Wimpersinger, who was at one time president of that union, who said that we needed to get away from militarism and wars and start to organize society in a way that we started creating for peaceful alternatives to military conflicts. You know, there's something drastically wrong. The AFL-CIO had been putting in place a committee on conversion under the leadership of William Wimpersinger, who was designated to head up that work. Once he died, that committee, I don't know if it still exists on paper or not, but it hasn't been meeting, and we should be asking why it hasn't been meeting, and should be, as working people, we should be insisting that the AFL-CIO reconstitute that committee on conversion and begin to the work that William Wimpersinger left off. He was a strong and strident voice for peace within the labor movement, and that's what we've got a right to expect.
I think this is another statement that you made, and I read many of your statements that you put out there. You say Obama has obviously moved to sabotage any diplomatic solution by sending massive amounts of arms into Syria at this particular time. Now is the time to bring people out into the streets. But what I was looking at, you say Obama has moved to sabotage any diplomatic solutions.
Exactly.
Do you think this is intentional?
Oh, for sure it's intentional because
Of course I do. You know that.
Immediately after the Russians said that they had an agreement with Assad to begin dismantling and getting rid of these chemical weapons, Obama sent massive amounts of arms. He used the CIA to send massive amounts of arms into Syria. This was all reported in the New York Times to these so-called
mm-hmm.
rebels. These are very vicious and mean and violent people. They are not going to be able to form any government in Syria that the Syrian people want. The Syrian people, over for the last 50 or 60 years at least, the Syrian people have indicated that they are very left-wing in their thinking, and they want some kind of socialism in Syria, whether it's a Nasserist-type socialism that Nasser advocated as part of the Arab Union, Arab Socialist Union, or a more left-wing form of socialism. The Syrian people, time and time again, have voted for these socialist and communist parties in Syria. The only reason they're not more massively represented in the Syrian Congress today is because all their leaders have been forced into exile by Assad. All that we have to do is insist that Assad sit down and meet with all these leaders, bring them back from exile, and sit down and meet with these leaders, and they're very moderate leaders by anybody's terms, no matter how you define what they think. These are very moderate leaders that have advocated a peaceful solution to the problems of Syria, and this is what Barack Obama and the United Nations and everybody else should be advocating, is that Assad be forced to sit down with these people and negotiate a settlement to all the problems in Syria. This is the real solution to the problems, and nobody wants to even acknowledge that these moderate forces exist.
I believe, and I'm reading some statements that I've seen that you have actually put out there. You said also, Obama has spoken. His excuse for war on Syria has been pulled out from under him. Now get ready for a CIA-orchestrated provocation that will be used as an excuse to attack Syria. You're expecting for something to be fabricated and created now.
I don't think there's any doubt that they've got to fabricate something because their intent.
They're already making plans.
And they've done this time and time again. Every imperialist war, even the Spanish-American War, was all based on a false pretext. We saw the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam, totally fabricated by the CIA and the National Security Administration. It never even existed.
Tell our listeners what happened in the Gulf of Tonkin so they can understand the basis of that and us going to war, a war that lasts for 10 years, folks.
Yeah, the Gulf of Tonkin was created to get us into the war in Vietnam. American forces, the CIA, had been active in Vietnam for many years even while the French were still there. And then they created this whole incident, and there were only a couple members of the Senate that opposed it. But
And this happened in 1964, where it was actually an attack on a U.S. destroyer, and then that was the provocation that took us into war, a war
right.
that went from 1965 to 1975, folks. And look at the same similarities that we had with Iraq, the provocation that we had. Excuse that we had, a false excuse to take us into war in 2003, and this war between Iraq and Afghanistan, 10 years later, we're still there.
Yeah, this whole Gulf of Tonkin thing, we were told that the North Vietnamese attacked an American ship in the Gulf of Tonkin. And
no proof.
And they played it up to make the American people think that it really existed, and it was just nothing but a big brainwash, because now even the National Security Agency and the Church Commission and all these other investigative agencies from the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate found that it was a total fabrication. It never even existed. And yet they even showed us photos, supposedly, of an attack on the Maddox or something, if I remember the name of the ship. But we were told that the North Vietnamese attacked this big American.
Yeah, they said they had radar of the North Vietnamese coming, and they were seeing how the torpedoes were in the water, and all of it was fabricated. It was a lie.
Yep.
And let me tell you what happened with the lie. 58,000 U.S. boys, young boys, men, women, died in a war that was built on fabrication. We lost 58,000. These are the deaths, not the total casualties. It was well over a half a million casualties. But the deaths, it was 58,000 because of something that was fabricated.
Yeah, and not to mention hundreds of thousands or millions of Vietnamese that died in a country that's still suffering from the effects of Agent Orange, just like in the
exactly. Agent Orange, back to talk. Speaking about chemical weapons, Agent Orange.
This country is the biggest supplier and user of chemical weapons in the history of mankind, and yet Obama has the nerve to talk about Assad. And even Assad's own chemical weapons have come from either the United States, Britain, or France, possibly Germany. But, you know, the propaganda campaign that you talked about before is so bizarre, but being blown up so big that it's the bigger the lie they create, the more they expect people to believe. But people are beginning to think and look into all of this, and they're finding that the American government, their own government, is lying to us. And this is something good that's coming out of a bad situation. These arms that the CIA has put into Syria now into the hands of these so-called rebels is going to create massive misery for the Syrian people.
And Alan, I always try to follow the way you think and what you say. And just recently you were saying how someone was trying to distort information that you were putting on the Internet. Well, what was that all about?
Well, they took a statement, an email that I put out, and they changed the wording of the email, and they sent it around to a bunch of people on my Facebook friends list, and it was all about Syria. I don't have it with me right now. I've been out for over a week on the road. So
yeah, without getting into the contents of it, but what they did is they manipulated information that was completely
fabricated. Yeah, they manipulated information, insert lies, things that I never even wrote. They took it and put it out in my name. And this is the way these people operate. And I saw some of this as I was traveling across Minnesota. Some of these Democratic Party hacks were doing the exact same things with things that I said, trying to make it look like I supported Assad. And my positions have never been anything in support of Assad. I've been very frank and open that I've supported these progressives and leftists that have been working to get Assad out of power. And, you know, I've never made a statement, not once, in support of Assad. I've compared Assad and Obama, for sure, and I've asked the question, who is the biggest mass murderer, Assad or Obama? And the finger always has to point right towards Obama. You know, so if we want to talk about who's using these chemical weapons and who manufactures them, the finger points right back to the United States, Britain, and France. So, you know, Assad is not the biggest culprit. He's a culprit in all this. But by no means is he the biggest and worst culprit of the bunch. We have the President of the United States is the worst culprit of the bunch, and you've got these people in Britain and France that are just as bad.
And then you also say an attack on Syria is a prerequisite to an attack on Iran, and Obama will stop at nothing in creating the excuse for an attack on Syria. So
yeah,
basically, everything is aimed at Iran.
Even before I heard these comments by Wesley Clark, and I'm sure I stated in your program before that you know, I believe that this whole thing with Syria was just to maneuver to get into another war with Iran, and you know, this is then I see Wesley Clark's statement, he verifies that. But somebody, you know, all you have to do is look at a map and see where the oil and gas is and where the pipelines go. And you can follow that, you know, from Iraq.
Follow
to,
the lines, folks.
And
you have to realize that Syria provides a port.
Right.
And you look at where the lines are going. The lines go from all the way through Syria to Iraq. If you look at where Iraq is on the map in relation to Afghanistan, what is right in the center of those two countries is Iran.
Right.
Folks, you need to understand this. When you look at when you look at the oil resources, when you hear about them saying American interests, it's not American interests as in the people, it's Wall Street. It's
exactly.
The big banks. It's the big corporations. It's all the oil companies. If you look at the oil interests just in that region, forget about Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has already been bought out. They already are owned by the big bankers.
Right.
But if you look at the oil resources there, we're talking about a quarter of a trillion barrels of oil just in that region of Iraq and Iraq and Iran. So can we understand the reason why we need to protect American interests? Help me out here, Alan.
Well, back when Gamal Abdel Nasser was the president in Egypt, people seem to have forgotten that the United States tried to take over control of the Suez Canal, and Nasser stood up to the United States then. And you have all these factors at play. The United States lost out big time, back in the 70s and everything against the peoples of the Middle East. And now the United States government is trying to reassert itself and reassert control over that region that it lost out from before. And all these governments that we see, even Syria, the oil fields and gas fields have been nationalized. Iran, they've been nationalized. Iraq had large-scale nationalization of the oil industry. And the oil companies in this country, in Great Britain and France, didn't want to stand for that. They wanted total control.
Explain so our listeners can understand when you say nationalized. What does that mean?
They were owned by the government. And
right.
It wasn't exactly a democratic people's control of the oil fields.
Right.
But it was the nationalization under government control. Whatever.
But it didn't belong to any private organizations, right?
Right. There were no oil companies like Shell Oil or Standard or Exxon or Mobil. It was the government controlled these oil fields, whether it was a good government or a bad government. The government controlled the oil fields. The Canadians had a similar situation in Canada with their oil. The Canadian government owned a lot of the oil fields and the processing and everything else. And the United States pressured the Canadians to do away with that nationalized aspect of their oil industry. And the Canadians are now paying through the nose for gas. They're paying a higher price for gas and oil than we do here in this country, even though that gas and oil is being produced in Canada. So, this is the way the United States government operates. They pulled economic levers and political strings to manipulate what goes on in Canada. In the Middle East, they haven't been able to pull those economic and political strings, so they have to resort to war.
Alan, I'm just going to speak on a couple other things, but I want to include in this about the economic impact that it has, because Americans need to understand. We talk about oil pipelines, but they need to see what is coming down the economic pipeline in this country as well. Because there's going to be an awakening, and folks, it's time, listen to programs like this. At least you can get a warning, and know that you need to go out in the streets and need to start taking a position and a stand.
Yep, There's no way we can solve the problems here in this country as long as we're spending so many trillions of dollars on militarism and wars. There's just no way. It's common sense. If you're spending money to bomb people in another country, that's money that you don't have to spend on health care, on creating jobs or anything else here in this country.
And they're starting to realize after he even came out with this Obamacare that there's a real big problem. The government doesn't have any money to subsidize it at all, none.
Right.
So what it's going to do is it's going to fall back on the working class. In other words, the working class, I might mention that they have created certain provisions where parts of Obamacare will not take effect with corporations and big businesses until 2015. But hello, folks, it takes effect next month with working people. So those provisions have not changed for working people, but they have given some type of made some additional provisions where corporations can be able to move forward in adjusting for the full ramifications of Obamacare. But one other thing I wanted to mention, Alan, you said Wall Street will not settle for anything short of full control of the oil and gas fields and pipelines transporting these resources in the Middle East. Now, I believe that was your statement also, correct?
Right. So basically,
everything comes to the fat cats on Wall Street, and they want to make certain that they control these resources. Forget about American interests; it's about the interests of Wall Street.
Whether it's these wars or whether it's healthcare, the bottom line is that this government is only concerned about doing what's good for Wall Street's profits. Talking about Obamacare just for a minute, the newspapers here in Minnesota just reported yesterday that Minnesota has the lowest cost for the health care, for the health insurance that people can purchase through Obamacare. And people should know, a working class family with a very modest income of what they say is a modest income of around $47,000 a year is going to be paying anywhere from $800 to about $1,300 a month for insurance under Obamacare. Now, you know, how many people can afford this kind of insurance? And they admitted that this is for the most mediocre insurance plans, where people actually have to pay a large amount out of their pockets even after they have purchased this insurance. So if people want to see what they're going to be paying, they should look at what Minnesotans are going to be paying, because the governor of Minnesota is boasting that Minnesotans will be paying less for insurance under Obamacare than any other state in the nation.
And that's true, because another wake-up call we should get is much of the financial areas, parts of Obamacare, as far as collecting those funds from individuals and households, it was put in the hands of the Internal Revenue Service. So
exactly.
You know, that should indicate something, where is essentially, and matter of fact, I might mention, Obama and his administration and Congress were trying to resist, saying that it was a tax, and finally one branch of our government came right out and said it is a tax. So
yeah, exactly.
and it's being enforced. We have one of the things, when I look at the way that interest rates, I work in the automobile industry, and you can buy cars now anywhere from 1.25% to 1.75%, less than 2%. You can buy homes at these very depressed interest rates. In other words, rates that have been kept down to less than 3% or 4% to buy a home. But, Alan, you know, that could change like overnight. We saw what happened in Cyprus, you know. It could happen. It could change overnight, where, you know, if they say, well, you know, we go to war or whatever, we could see gas prices all of a sudden go from $3.90 a gallon to like over $7 a gallon, something that you need. Your car payment goes from, they can change your rate. People think that they're locked into certain things, that it won't change. You're paying 1.5% today, and tomorrow you're paying 25%. But you owe it, because the government says you owe it. Alan,
right.
These are lessons that we have already seen. Just speak a little bit about what happened in Cyprus, where people thought that they had certain securities.
Well, they thought they had certain securities, and the government in Cyprus, which was a communist government elected by the people, was taking measures in order to make sure the people's standard of living was protected. All of a sudden, there was a big bombing in Cyprus. Nobody knew what created this bombing, and a bunch of ammunition and stuff flew up, and they blamed the communist president for allowing it to happen, even though everybody agreed that you know, this government had no responsibility in the bombing. But all of a sudden, because they're saying that he didn't take adequate precautions, that this government was was responsible. And they created the pretext for a right-wing government to come to power in Cyprus, and that government is now looking after protecting the assets of the very wealthiest who had investments in Cypriot banks.
And what about the austerity measures that they have imposed upon the people?
Well, the austerity measures are very severe, and there's now very severe rising unemployment in Cyprus as a result of all this. And people are paying more for everything, the goods and services, and the government is forcing people to pay for things that they never had to pay for before. And these are the austerity measures that are being taken. And, you know, this is what resulted in Greece. The people of Greece are opposing the same kind of austerity measures. And we see people rising up in Portugal and Spain and across the world in opposition to these austerity measures. People are not going to stand for it. But the austerity measures, people, I have to understand, these austerity measures are being put in place because this is the way these governments are paying for their wars.
Exactly. That's the way they're paying for their wars. In other words, we have seen the same thing in Detroit. We see the same thing in Pennsylvania. We see it throughout the country, right here in California.
Yeah.
They are paying for these wars, and the individuals, the cities, and our states are suffering as a result of it. And, Alan, what were you going to say, Alan?
More and more cities are going to suffer the same fate that Detroit has suffered right now. And this is a never-ending situation as long as this so-called war economy with the military-industrial complex at the helm of our government continues. We got to bring this government down and put in place a we the people government. And until we do that, things are not going to change.
Alan, I'm going to have you to make just respond to the statement that you made, and then after that, I give you contact information. We're going to wrap this up. Really appreciate you joining the program. Once again, we have Alan Mackey joining us. He is a regular on our program, and he brings a lot of insightful information. You said sooner rather than later, Obama supporters are going to have to admit and acknowledge that Obama is not the guy who was sold to them with the potential of becoming this great leader of the people. Is that your statement?
That's my statement, too, and I think we've already seen that.
And I'll finish it. What you're saying, Obama is nothing but one more Wall Street imperialist warmonger.
Yeah, and that has all been played out, and we're seeing, you know, he's no different than John McCain. What is the difference between Obama and John McCain?
I think McCain is better.
He might be a little more liberal than Obama.
I think he's better. Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, if I was looking at the better of two evils, I would have voted for McCain.
Well, at least people
No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't vote for either one of them.
At least, though, people would have been coming out to the streets in larger numbers. Obama has sown this confusion. People don't know if they should go out into the streets to oppose him or not. And we're still seeing at this late date people trying to cover for Obama. We're even hearing terms like Obama is a liberal imperialist. You know, what kind of term is a liberal imperialist? Who ever heard of a liberal imperialist?
That's an oxymoron.
You know?
Alan, how can people reach you? And thanks for joining the program.
They can call me at 218-386-2432, or they can Google my name, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and they'll come across my blog, the Podunk blog, and all my contact information is there, email, phone numbers, and whatnot.
And thanks again for joining us today, Alan, and we look forward to our listeners joining us once again next week on the Socialist Insight, and we will have Stephen Katz with the Socialist Party USA, the New York chapter, joining the program. Thanks again. Thanks again, Alan. Thanks again, Ruthann. We look forward to seeing you. Join us next week.
Good night.